You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
The downside of not doing this is potentially such a catastrophe for our nation that we don't even want to think about it.
Not doing this, of course, is not passing the $700 billion bailout that Congress, after working late into the night, actually came to an agreement on. There is expected to be a vote today in the House, and the Senate will take up the deal as early as Wednesday, and then it will go to the president's desk, and then the biggest Wall Street bailout in history will be up to the markets to decide whether it's good or not. The Tokyo's Nikkei index is down 1.3% today, an early sort of reaction. The Hong Kong's Hang Seng index shed about 2% this morning. And Dow futures are a little negative on the deal, although there's much, much more to shake out between now and Wednesday when it passes. Joining us to discuss both the politics and the economics of this deal is New York Times reporter David Herzenhorn, who's down in Washington covering the negotiations. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
And here in our studio in New York is Floyd Norris, economics reporter and New York Times blogger on all things finance and economics. Floyd, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I'll begin with you, David. The thing that interests me in listening to Senator Judd Gregg there, Republican from New Hampshire, at one of the news conferences yesterday, talking about we don't even want to think about the catastrophe if this doesn't pass. I'm wondering if you can sort out the economic fear in that statement versus the political fear for not supporting this. Which is greater?
For not supporting this, it's hard to say. You know, Judd Gregg and other members of Congress are really struggling to explain to the American public why they feel compelled to vote for this thing that nobody likes. And it's a really hard thing to sort of make people understand that around the corner is lurking this huge problem that folks don't necessarily quite see the full consequences of. So you hear a lot of this talk, and you know, I think we'll see the House have some fierce debate this morning, but ultimately it looks like it's headed for passage, but it's going to be tough.
Describe the constituency of these House Republicans who also had their own news conference yesterday where they said, okay, we added enough to this bill to make it palatable. We saved the American taxpayers. We still don't like it, but thanks to us, it's not as bad as it could be. Is anyone buying that?
I don't know. You know, we don't know what this is going to cost American taxpayers. We won't know for a long time. Floyd knows more about the market reaction than I do, but I think what you're seeing is, you know, folks realizing that there's a lot of other turmoil going on in the market, the things going on with Wachovia, with struggling banks, and we just don't know yet, you know, how quickly the Treasury will be able to get this up and running and, you know, really start to make a difference here. So there's a lot of noise on Capitol Hill because nobody likes the idea of putting $700 billion of taxpayer money on the line. And you don't, you know, it's not like you get, you know, wealth and prosperity for that. What you get, presumably, is you avoid a big, you know, crater in the road. And it's not all that appealing.
Well, one quick question, Washington-based question. Who's a leader? Who emerges victorious out of this? Is Nancy Pelosi? Is it anyone in the Senate? Is it Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson? Is he a winner here?
I don't think anybody's a winner. I think they realize they've got a really bad situation. If it works down the line, some of the folks who have been a little bit more level-headed and say, you know, we don't like this, but we've got to do something that inaction is a worse step. But in the short term, it's very hard to see too many winners.
Floyd Norris here in the studio. Lou Dobbs, not my favorite economics analyst at all, was making much about the fact that what this is doing is bailing out foreign investors who need some sort of signal from Washington to keep them from wreaking financial havoc on the United States. Is that another way of saying that markets need to hear something from Washington for stability to return to these stock markets and options markets that had so much more turmoil in the last several weeks?
The logic of this bailout was that they were trying to support markets for these really dicey assets. And if you're going to support the market, you pretty much have to buy the assets from whoever owns them. And that includes
the mortgage-backed
foreign
securities.
The mortgage-backed
toxic
securities.
Assets, right.
And, of course, it may go much farther than that. This bill gives Paulson the authority, if he wants to buy almost any kind of financial asset. He can buy credit default swaps. He can buy credit card receivables. He can buy anything he wants to. And this is extraordinary power for the Treasury Secretary. Another point worth considering on the overseas front is that it wasn't just the U.S. that was having bailout weekend.
Right, the insurance company in Europe, is now in some sort of trouble.
Right, we had bailouts from three countries for Fortis. We had a bailout from Germany for something called Hypo Real Estate, which is a real estate lender there. And the British government took over a major mortgage lender in that country, a bank called Bradford and Bingley. It was going wild all over Europe. And many of these losses that these institutions are suffering come from European loans, from British loans. They don't just come from American assets.
So why shouldn't I just take all my money out of all my accounts and put it in a mattress at this point? Because ultimately, that's what this is, that comes down to.
You like that.
I mean, you even maybe had the thoughts. If I'm having the thought, maybe 2 million people are thinking of doing it. If this is all about trust, it's really about depositors like myself and other American taxpayers sitting tight and not panicking about this, right?
I get a lot of emails from people asking basically that same question. One of the reasons they structured this deal the way they did, I believe, and they haven't been saying this publicly, is that what they've learned from the earlier bailout efforts that we've had over the last few months is that when the government announces it's going to support an institution, instead of people saying, oh, good, that institution is fine, they say, oh, my, that institution needs help. I better get out quick.
Right.
And this is an effort to support everybody and therefore to not make it look like anybody needs it.
There's no place to hide is kind of what this is saying.
And also the fact that we buy your assets doesn't prove we think you're in trouble. And they're willing to buy assets from basically any financial institution that does business in this country.
Well, David, let's talk about what's in the bill regarding Henry Paulson's power. I mean, Floyd says he has unlimited power to buy anything. He didn't mention, like, bridges to nowhere, but I'm assuming that's possibly in the pot as well. What sort of oversight do members of Congress say actually exists in there to watch what Paulson is doing?
So the administration's proposal started out with no restrictions almost whatsoever. I mean, the secretary would have run this program without virtually any oversight, and the White House also knew that that wasn't necessarily going to fly. So you've got sort of two efforts at controls here. First, there's a Financial Stability Oversight Board, of which Paulson is a member, but also the Fed chairman, the chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, a board that is essentially will help Hank Paulson run this program. And then there's a congressional oversight panel appointed by the majority and minority members of leaders in Congress that's supposed to monitor everything how this program operates and report back to Congress. But Floyd's right that at bottom, you know, the Treasury Secretary will now control a $700 billion wealth fund, in a way,
yeah,
to go out and buy these securities. Now, Paulson himself has struggled really hard to help members of Congress, let alone the public, understand what the challenge here is, which is not, it's not as if the government is going out and telling these financial institutions, you know, we want to buy up all your junk, you know, that it's just an absolute garbage sale and this stuff won't be, you know, worth anything down the line. The challenge is that the stuff might be very valuable and firms might be reluctant to sell at bargain prices only to see the taxpayers profit. And so they're trying to create a market here where there has been no market.
Really the challenge. Well, David Herzenhorn, thank you very much. Covering this from the Washington angle, the negotiations on Capitol Hill, as we said, the bailout will go to the Senate on Wednesday. So Floyd, what precedent is there for this kind of oversight? I'm thinking of the Resolution Trust savings and loan program. There's, of course, the famous politicians taking over New York back in the 70s. And, you know, the bankers sort of helped New York out of its bankruptcy.
Resolution Trust was fundamentally different. In Resolution Trust, the government was stuck with an awful lot of loans and assets that had been taken over for non-payment of loans. But those had come from failed banks. the government didn't have any choice about what assets it owned. What it had a choice about was what to do about them.
I see.
And it tried to manage it over time.
So no, they didn't have a choice of what to buy, but they had a choice of how to dispose of them. Well, we're going to talk a little more macroeconomics as far as this bailout is concerned when we come back. New York Times reporter Floyd Norris is with us. We're talking about the $700 billion bailout that goes to the House today for a vote and the Senate on Wednesday if all goes according to plan, but plan?
We'll see.
Would we use that word?
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. We are discussing a $700 billion Wall Street bailout plan that lawmakers have apparently hammered out on Capitol Hill. We expect the House to actually vote on the plan this morning. Still with us is New York Times reporter Floyd Norris. We're also joined now by Gus Fauché, the director of macroeconomics at moodyseconomy.com. Thank you, Gus, for joining us this morning. Practically speaking, do you think the market has confidence in this plan, but more importantly, that the plan will be executed in the way that it's intended?
I think so. I mean, you know, obviously they've been through a lot over the past week or so, but it looks like they've reached an agreement that both the House and the Senate, the Democrats and Republicans, can agree on. And I think that the $700 billion that they're talking about should be a large enough number to convince markets that the Bush administration is serious about this.
But what if it's not? I mean, the idea is that basically people believe this works. It's not as though they're pulling a lever and some absolute sort of mechanical reality comes into play. I mean, people still have to just believe that this isn't going to go any further.
That's correct. And I think $700 billion is big enough. I mean, it could be that it'll turn out that that's not big enough. And then probably not the Bush administration, but the next administration will decide whether they need to go forward with even more money or decide that enough is enough and pull the plug.
Based on what we know about the plan at this point, or at least the form it's in that the House is going to be voting on, what do you think it will trigger? What kinds of markets do you think it would open up? And do you believe it will release this anxiety that's plagued what's been happening?
I think so. What will happen is the banks will sell their bad assets to the federal government. The federal government will take those things off the banks' books. The banks will get cash for them. And it's not going to happen immediately, but I think over the next month or two, that will make banks more willing to lend, and that will help restore the flow of credit to the economy and eventually lead to the expectation is a turnaround in the housing market.
Well, gosh, you certainly sounds like you see a lot of positives here, but what about some of the unknowns or potentially unintended consequences that some critics have talked about? I mean, for starters, just executing this plan that is unprecedented in every way.
Well, I mean, the big question is what's going to happen to the money that the taxpayers are putting up. I think it's probably likely that the administration is not going to need the whole $700 billion, but it's entirely possible that things don't turn around, and then taxpayers will be on the hook for that money, and you know, we'll see a bigger budget deficit, and that'll cause problems for the economy down the road.
Floyd, what happened in the junk bond crisis when Milken's junk bonds were shown to be worthless, essentially, and the markets had to readjust? I mean, stuff that's worthless doesn't suddenly become worth something, right?
Well, in the junk bond debacle, the government made it much worse by stepping in at the bottom and forcing insurance companies to sell their junk bonds. It turned out those bonds were worth a lot of money in many cases. Some of them were worthless. And the hope is that's what's going on with some of these mortgage assets, that people are too worried and that the government will buy them and they'll go up in value over time. The question is, what's the government going to pay? And again, the Treasury Secretary has been given complete latitude. He doesn't have to pay the lowest possible price. He has to pay the lowest possible price consistent with other goals, which include supporting the housing market and getting the banking system going. In other words, he has to pay whatever price he chooses to pay.
Is there any element in the oversight portion of this plan that will be watching how that valuation process is set out?
There's a lot of oversight to watch, but no oversight to approve.
So they can't really keep track of this is going to be happening so quickly that it.
Well, they can keep track of it, but the fact he doesn't need to go if he thinks this asset should be purchased for $10 million, it will be purchased for $10 million. And if the oversight folks think that's a bad price, they can say so later.
So what do we watch to try to figure out if the bulk of this stuff that's being purchased is has some value or is actually worthless? I mean, would it be foreclosure rates worldwide or in the United States? What economic indicators suggests that this stuff is declining in value versus stabilizing?
Well, those indicators would help. But one of the realities here is that these are very complicated and securities. And not only are they complicated, they differ greatly from one to another. So the fact that you conclude this security is worth 50 cents on the dollar does not mean that a very similar security on a different pile of mortgages isn't worth 60 cents or 40 cents. So it's going to work. It'll be interesting to see how much information they make available to the public about the details of what they're buying so that people can try to look at some of them and reach their own conclusions.
I think it's very much in the Bush administration's interest to make sure that all that information is available, because one of the things that they want to do is be able to establish prices. A large part of the problem is that banks don't know how much many of these assets that they have on their banks are worth.
Mm-hmm.
So this program should allow banks to know that, and so that will allow banks to price them so then they can take the appropriate steps.
Thank you, gentlemen. Lots of questions that we will continue to discuss this week. Gus Fauché, Director of Macroeconomics at MoodysEconomy.com. Thank you for joining us. And Floyd Norris from the New York Times. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Floyd.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.